Hello and happy Thanksgiving from ESBK Studios. I'm your host, Richard Dort. It is the 28th of November, 2013, and this is episode 28, part two of an interview with an impulse owner, Jeff Moore. Last episode, we covered mostly just his ownership experience, picking the bike up, this and that. This episode, we're going to get into, he gets into track days. And the Brammo lifestyle. I think he talked a bit about that in the last episode maybe. So this is going to be another hour. You know, I think the last episode was about 40, 45 minutes. This is 55 minutes of Jeff and I chatting. It was a little hard to find a spot I was willing to stop at. There is another hour and a half of interview with Jeff, but I will edit that down. I've got to listen to it, and that's going to take some work. So that may not be out next week. It may take another week. I may try to sneak in another interview. I'm trying. I've put out feelers for three people to interview. I haven't got anything firm yet back. And actually, I've only got two. Yeah. One, yes, I can make time. And another, like, we were talking about it, and then I just never got replies. So, and then one I haven't heard anything from. So that's a bit of a bummer. I got to talk to Shalina Moreta. She did not make the test. Brammo did a test last weekend. She didn't go. She was bummed. She didn't know a test was happening. So that was hard news to break to Shalina. But she simply explained. She says, look, if they don't need me there, then they're not going to pay me to go. So, which is cool. I mean, it just works out. It's just kind of one of those weird things when you're a professional rider. You know, you're not just a rider, you're a professional rider. She says, yes, I would ease lovely. She would just go up for free. But I don't think Brammo would feel right. I think they want to pay her for her time. And so she didn't get invited. But Shane and Eboz were running the TTX. Actually, Shane was running an engineering test model, and it looks like he did some laps on the RR. Eboz, Eric Bostrom, our U.S. e-road racing champion, was running a brand new fully fairinged TTX, and it was sexy. It was all carbon fiber. It totally looked like an off-season World Superbike or MotoGP bike. You know, it was the black, raw black carbon fiber fairings with some stickers on, white stickers on it. You know, no paint scheme, no nothing. It was that whole look going. I'm sure it's not intentional. I'm sure it saved them a bunch of money not having it painted, but it's still kind of, you know, I find it kind of humorous. So, anything else going on? I'll talk about the new road racing series. I have very little information on that still, other than the press release that I put up for y'all. Someone did ask me a question on the 13th and on Facebook, and I just now noticed it, so I just replied. I did a nice big reply, so you can check that out on Facebook or listen at the end of the interview with Jeff. Otherwise than that, what's new is some updates here in 500 Interceptor land. 500 Interceptor land. Right now, though, I will let you know that I am wearing my CD boots. I got these on a heck of a deal, and they're like the perfect boots for me. I got them, when did I come home? 2003? So somewhere around 2004, 2005, I bought these boots. Somewhere around there. Yeah. And the VFR did not run for very long after that. It got put in the garage and then wasn't able to repair it. And then it kind of died a sad death, but a slow, neglected death, unfortunately. Outside of my, control, really. But yeah, but anyway, these boots I kept safe and I brought them down and I am so happy to have them. And anyone that's had motorcycle specific boots, much less nice CDs, knows what I'm talking about. So I'm wearing them right now, folks, because they're actually just about that comfortable. And also, I'm really excited tonight because it's been like Christmas since I went home to Maine. I left a few things at my brother's place. Mom and I drove down. I moved my mom down from Tennessee, and she's living with my brother now. And I left some stuff by accident in his shed. And so I went back tonight after Thanksgiving. And got it. And well, I say that I don't have a car. I'm the person my I can't. We went to anyway. We went to in-laws and had a good time. And so my mom took me back to the house so I could pick my stuff up. Someday I'll have my own vehicle, but other than my Bianchi, got my Penske. And I know I'm jabbering on, but I'm really excited, so I have to share a little bit. I got my nice four-way adjustable Penske that I had stolen off my VFR, and I got really good news from Traction Dynamics. I bought it from them originally back in 2004, 2005, somewhere around there. About the same time I got the boots, and I got it from them. And I called him and I said, look, I got an old nine, I got this shock that I bought from you folks for my 91 VFR. Can it be converted over to usage on my 500 Interceptor? And the word back is yes. It's going to be about $400 to $500 in parts and labor because they're going to rebuild it, obviously, and retune it. It might be less if they don't have to replace the spring. So that's really good news. I don't have that money, but it's good news that I don't have to spend, $1,500 or $1,700 on a new shock. I can spend just $400 or $500 on the shock that I have and make it work for my 500 Interceptor. And let me tell you, putting this shock on a 86 500 Interceptor will be about the equivalent of putting one of those electronically controlled dampening shocks that Öhlins has on your impulse. It may be even a bigger jump than that. Yeah, lots to be excited about here at ESBK Studios. I have two subscribers. Thank you very much, Protomech and Jeff. So I've had three whole people actually listen to the podcast, which kind of sucks, but it is what it is. That is more people than I had last week. And one person did purchase the podcast, so thank you very much. I believe it was Shiny Side, but I'm not positive. So yeah, without further ado, Jeff, last week we talked about in episode 27. Oh, if yeah, let me bring you up to speed. Last week, this is part two of an interview with an Impulse owner. And last week, Jeff and I talked about the ownership experience. There's some really good stuff about parts being so inexpensive, how easy it is to charge, what he's using to charge, and some other things. And this episode, we're going to talk a lot about track day use. He's gone to many track days and has continued to go to track days ever since. Funny enough, he went to a track day randomly, and sure enough, there's Brammo. He talks about the Brammo lifestyle. So, yeah, this will be about that. There is another hour and a half of interview with him that I will edit down, because a lot of it was I just kind of went back to double check some stuff at the end. So, yeah, that'll take a lot more work. That'll be a lot harder to do. So that may not be done next week. That may be done in 2 weeks. And in the meantime, I have tried to get a hold of people for interviews and multiple people, and it's proven as hard as any as ever. So at least people aren't telling me yes and then just not showing up. So that's an improvement. Step in the right direction. So I've gabbed on for 10 minutes. Dear Lord, I'm so sorry. Without further ado, Here's where we left off last week. Here's Jeff.
Oh, my ear's ringing. Probably somebody's talking about me. No one. I haven't checked the forums. Let's see if there's any angry.
Yeah,
let's just
take
take a moment to see if there's any angry people on the forums right now. Any angry replies? Jeff, TTGP fan. Nope. I haven't seen nothing on Facebook. They're all hiding because they know they're in trouble.
Yeah, exactly. They're missing out.
Yeah, they are. They are. Yeah, they said last time, oh, I'm going to make it next time. That was it. Yeah, okay, whatever. All right. Okay, so Switch gear, good quality.
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, no complaints. The I'm trying to come up with minutia to describe to you, but it's just all kind of standard stuff. I have taken it on and off again many times because of swapping handlebars. You know. In fact, now it's sort of, I put on these hilarious, like, bar end turn signals that I had to drill the handlebars and move the switchgear around and all this stuff. And so, it's fine.
Cool. Braking?
Oh, man. It spoils me because, you know, so when the past couple track days I've done, I have brought the Impulse and my housemate's Daytona 675.
Mm.
And I sort of alternate, take the Impulse out, let it charge, take the 675 out while it's charging, sort of alternate bikes. And getting back, I mean, the Daytona is a great, great bike.
Mm.
But I'm not sure whether it's a function of the Impulse not having as high a top speed or the Impulse having better brakes or both, but, I mean, after getting back on the Impulse and sort of instinctively using the same, I'm making imaginary brake-grabbing motions here,
mm-hmm.
Using the same force to brake, I nearly, like, lurch myself off the bike. I mean, the Impulse brakes are fantastic.
Oh wow!
I think they're way overpowered for what the bike is.
Well, until I get my 230-pound Keister on there, and then probably just about right.
Right.
So, all right, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Avons, what did you think of those, and what did you replace them with?
I replaced them with Pilot Road 3s. The Avons were fine. I don't really have any complaints. I think I got like 7,000 miles?
Hmm.
7,000 miles out of them? Yeah, they were fine. I certainly had my share of, like, spinning up the rear tire in the wet or whatever, but, you know, I'm sure that was due to, I don't know how much of that was the tire and how much me, you know, being inexperienced at riding the bike or, you know, who knows what. I never had a situation where I was like, oh man, that rear tire is terrible or, you know, and the best thing the Avons ever did was when it got time to take them off, we went and did that, just billowing clouds of smoke photo.
Nice.
They left their mark on the world. I mean, the comment from sort of all my friends was that, you know, it just, I gotta make up for all the greenhouse gases that I'm saving.
You know? Oh, right. Yeah, you're right. When they're right, they're right. Pilot 3s, those aren't the sport touring, those are the sport tires, right?
I think you're thinking of the Pilot Powers. The Pilot Roads are the sport touring, like,
okay.
the huge sipes everywhere.
Yes. So you went with sport touring tires instead of the regular sport tires.
Yeah, because
okay.
I mean, the times I take the bike to the track, I'm usually putting, like, slicks on or something, so.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right, cool. Yeah, which is what I do. I had somebody tell me I needed sport tires one time on my VFR in Maine, and I was like, no.
Yeah, I mean, the Pilot Road 3s are totally great. In fact, I got lazy and took them to the track once, and they did fine. So
sweet. Probably they heated up about the same time your batteries did, so it worked out
exactly.
Just fine.
Exactly.
You're like, oh, all right. There's a new solution for Dunlop and everyone to and Michelin to sell sport touring tires. They're great track day tires for an electric motorcycle.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Yeah. Developed right about the time they overheat and start to get greasy, it doesn't matter because your battery's overheated and are complaining at you, so it's all good.
And as a bonus, you know, the stiffer middle compound makes for I've also tested that those as burnout fodder. The motorcycle does the impulse does terrible things to you because you know like when you're sitting at a stoplight and I mean it's like well not like I'm wasting any gas pin throttle you know it's just terrible and so when I went to this electric vehicle summit thing at the Google campus a couple months back and Brammo was there and a couple of the Brammo people were present, sort of, you know, making friends, shaking hands, sort of presenting the bikes to the sort of old electric graybeards present. And the crowd at this sort of thing was, you know, the type of dude that built a homemade Ford Ranger EV conversion in his garage. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that type of dude. And, you know, awesome, totally hardcore, and I love those guys. But I literally had to explain to a dude, you know, he had all sorts of questions about the bike, and he wanted to know, oh, well, you know, how many kilowatts is the motor? I said, oh, I think like 40, something yep. like that. And he sort of frowned and shook his head. He's like, no, that can't be right. That I was like, no, I'm pretty sure it's somewhere in the 40 range. And he's like, no, well, you wouldn't need that many kilowatts for that small a vehicle. Why, you know, you wouldn't need that. That can't be a right number. And we looked it up, and he's like, well, that doesn't make any sense. Why would you need that many kilowatts for that small a thing? And I had to explain to him that, well, you see, sometimes going fast is fun.
Yes. Wait. Yeah. And able to sell an electric, you know, an electric sport bike.
Right.
You've got to have some power.
Right. And you know? Anyway, so the whole day culminated with there was somebody there shooting a documentary or video about the event or something. And she went up to the Brammo guys and was like, hey, are you going to do any more like test rides today? And I think it was the end of the day. They were kind of tired and they were like, eh. And, you know, I had to pipe. I was like, I'll ride around for you. And so she's like, okay, well, could I get a shot of you sort of like leaving this area and kind of going to the parking lot? And I sort of like looked over at the Brammo guys, and they were tired at the end of the day, like talking to Ford Ranger man the whole time. And like, I just ripped a hilarious burnout in the middle of all the tent stalls, and it was just the looks on the Brammo guys' faces combined with the looks of on the, all the Leaf owners' faces just made for this magical melange of it's indescribable. You had it, yeah.
You had to be
there. Yeah. The shock and horror combined, you know.
Yeah, the hell yeah.
Exactly. That was clearly the best thing they'd seen all day. So.
they're gearheads, man. They're gearheads.
Yeah, exactly.
No, yeah, I mean, you know, the Leaf owner's like, you know, oh, I'm sipping and electric people, I'm glad I'm with EV and I don't have all those ruckus people and and loud V8s, and then all of a sudden here comes Jeff.
Exactly. I mean, you gotta like count on the like motorcyclist to show up in an EV event and just, you know, you gotta cause trouble somehow.
Somehow. Yeah. I'd be riding it off, jumping off curbs and stuff.
I did manage to obtain a prototype Renault like city EV car and like just like drifted it around the parking lot for a while. at a whopping like 80 kilometers an hour. Is that like 40 or something? Yeah.
Nice. All right. So, okay. So, broken fine. It was the transmission that broke in. The clutch particularly now feels much better. Yep. It is a cable clutch.
Yeah. The regular old. Yeah.
I've always had hydraulics on the VFR.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to talk to Brian about that.
Ha.
Like, man. Yeah. Cause hydraulic clutches are nice. But
yeah.
Hydraulic clutches are nicer on gas bikes because you have to hold them at stoplights. This bike, indeed, you don't have to hold a stoplight. Did you, indeed, do the rollback?
Yes. The rollback was one of the most important developments in the Brammo forum people sort of technology advancements.
Yeah.
In fact, it's affected me to the point where now I do the rollback on gas bikes.
Sorry.
Yeah. It's thoroughly ingrained in muscle memory now.
I think I've probably done it once or twice at a traffic light and back in the day when I was riding all the time. Let's see here. Yeah, so we got the rollback down. You Shalina used the rollback in one of the race starts.
Yeah.
I remember interviewing her and she said she slipped a clutch and I was like, I think I said quietly, I'm not sure that's exactly the way to do it, but okay. And then, you know, and then next race she's got a thing taped. Don't use the clutch.
Yep.
Clutchless shifting.
I guess I don't really do it just from, I like the clutch action. I like the, I mean, I don't know. I've probably done it on the track at under duress, but I mean, day to day riding, I usually use the clutch.
Okay. You just pop it in real quick when you shift.
Yeah.
Is it just kind of on off switch at that point because you're just up and through?
Yeah.
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 Because you'll pin the motor pretty quick if you hold the clutch in, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's, I mean, the clutch itself feels super nice. It's nice and smooth. I have no complaints there.
Okay. Excellent. All right. So how did the first, I don't know, month or two or whatever of commuting go? Was it how quick did you acclimate to get on the bike and ride it?
The most difficult part was like concealing my massive sheet eating grin all the time. Just like hilarious. I mean, my commute is mainly lane splitting over the Bay Bridge. And you know, at speed, you know, like at speed, the impulse isn't that much different from like, you know, a normal kind of street fighter-y, call it a, you know, 650-ish bike. Yeah. And so there wasn't really much to adjust to at speed on the freeway. Everybody always assumes that, oh my God, it doesn't make any noise. Lane splitting is, you know, you like people are going to run you over all the time. And I don't know. I don't buy it. Like, I think, you know, people are on their cell phones and doing their makeup and whatever. I don't rely on people to hear me anyway, so.
Yeah. All right. So what, is it a weird sensation at lane splitting speed?
No. In fact, the only problems it really causes is if I see somebody ahead of me with an open window, I let off the throttle and regen past them just to startle people.
What does it sound like when you regen?
A TIE fighter.
Oh, okay.
Woo!
Yep.
What the hell was that?
Exactly. Yeah, no, it's given me many, many, many new hobbies. Also, if I ride behind friends, making them think I'm a siren behind them.
I'm sorry. I would play with that all day long.
Yep. Startling pedestrians in crosswalks. It's endless, endless fun.
So you don't need noise regulations, you just need regen.
Oh, yeah. And, in fact, when I picked the bike up from...
Go ahead. Sorry.
Don was sort of giving me sort of the final sort of, you know, oh, these are things you should know. Don was sort of giving me the final sort of, you know, stuff to know. And he actually instructed me on how, if you do it right, and if you, you know, have the bike in neutral or you put the clutch in, you can rev the throttle in, you know, the certain sequence to, like, wolf whistle at girls.
I had kind of figured that out on my bike too.
Yep.
My naughty stuff was that the exhaust I had sat low enough that it was aimed up just right that if girls with dresses decided to walk behind my motorcycle,
right.
Wah! you know, and it's not a vroom of an inline. It was a V4.
Yep.
One girl thought it was funny and haha, it wasn't that cute. Another girl walked back out and like beat me on the arm.
did not appreciate motorcycle Marilyn Monroe.
No, didn't appreciate motorcycle Marilyn Monroe. She should have been walking in front of me.
Right.
Anyway, so let's see here. Nice. So there's lots of tricks to the. That's a good selling point. There's lots of.
Oh yeah.
So commuting was just commuting.
Yeah. I mean, other than being way more fun.
Way more fun. Why was it more? Well, okay, yeah. TIE fighter noise made it more fun.
Yep.
Other things that make it more fun, was it just? Is it less stressful on a quiet bike like that? It's not vibrating all over the place.
Yeah, well, that's not specific to commuting, but yeah, I mean, definitely, it's, I remember I bought rear, spools, swing arm spools, to use for rear stand, and I go to put them on, and I, you know, tighten them down, and my housemate says to me, he's like, hey, you probably should put some Loctite on those bolts to protect against oh.
Yeah. What are you going to say to that?
Right. And so, yeah, I mean, the lack of vibration is definitely a less stressful experience all around, not just for, you know, day-to-day riding. I mean, you know, extremities don't go numb, et cetera. And I don't know how much people have talked to you about this, but the lack of vibration, combined with the lack of, you know, I mean, basically it's just the road feel you get, especially at the track and also commuting and just, you know, everything. It's just, it's crazy. It's a crazy experience.
Shalina and specifically Eric Bostrom was the first one to start talking about that to me.
Yeah.
In the one interview I got to do with him. He was just like, there's so much more feel.
Yeah.
And he was tripping him out because he come into, I don't know if he was talking about Daytona or what, but he said, you come into a corner and he'd be hard on the brakes, and he let off the rear brake, and all of a sudden you hear clack, 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 clack.
Yeah.
And you're like, what the hell is that? And all he's talking about the RR, and it was just the rear brake rattling around.
Well, I thought I broke my motorcycle many times because of strange noises that emitted from it that you just don't normally hear in a bike. Chain rattle turns out that when a bike doesn't make any other noise, a freshly lubed chain sounds really gross.
I'm sorry.
Like, it's just, you're riding along to the symphony of wet sucking noises. It's just, you keep apologizing to people on the street. It's just...
That's a good warning to tell people.
Right.
You need to know.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Fucking nice. All right. Oh, shoot. All right. And then, so, I mean, you don't have to charge at work.
I actually found a garage that has a charger, and I can, but A, it being San Francisco, so there's like 15 Teslas just in my garage, and they're always, you know, taking up the charger. Chargers, I should say. It's I can charge at work if I have to, but I don't have to. So, I mean, I'll use it if I know I'm going to be, you know, jumping off to some far, far away place. But
yeah,
it's nice to not have to.
Sweet. So commuting, it was just riding a bike. Other than you get to mess with people with your TIE fighter noise.
Yeah.
That's worth the price of admission right there. Shoot.
Let us not underestimate the fun of messing people with TIE fighter noise. I mean, I've loaned the bike to a couple friends, and every time people come back and they're like, I have never gotten that much attention on a motorcycle ever. Like ever. You know, you can ride around a, you know, brand new Ducati whatever, or, you know, a buddy of mine has an MZ, or, you know, like, you can ride around some strange motorcycles, but nothing will get as much attention as, you know, sort of.
Yeah.
What
does that affect your, did that affect your commuting for a while?
I basically schedule an extra 15 minutes into anywhere I go to, like, field press conferences about the bike.
I've heard about that, but I wanted to, yeah.
Oh,
that's awesome.
It is ridiculous. I mean, the Brammo kind of engineers were cracking up because when I went to the race at Laguna, the e-road racing MotoGP
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
And I was there, and the Brammo guys were, you know, kind of out front in the stall, or out front of the, like, in the paddock, answering customer questions. But eventually they had to, like, you know, run away and work on the bike or do stuff. And I was there, and I just sort of started wandering up to people and answering questions, because that's what I've done nearly every day since January. And Brian comes up to me, and he's, like, cracking up. He's like, well, we should put you on sales commission. And I was like, you don't understand how much time I've spent answering questions about this motorcycle.
Nice. Are you seeing more impulses around?
I have seen a couple of the wild now. The first one I ran into, I actually chased him down in midday San Francisco traffic and pulled up to the next stoplight and said, hi! And, you know, it's...
Was he a Brammo Forum person, or?
Yes, Jonathan. He actually, I had actually met him before at Scuderia, but it was my first in the wild, impulse.
Sweet, sweet.
And let me tell you, if there is anything in the world that sounds cooler than an impulse going by, it is two impulses going by.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. So commuting is fine. Has anything changed over the past almost year now?
10 months? Yeah. Only in terms of things I've done to it. I ripped off the passenger handholds. I took off the whole tail section. I've relocated the turn signal. Stupid, silly things are being done to the bike. But, you know, it's all mainly in lieu of there's nothing really else to fiddle with. So, you know.
So you haven't tried to hack the controller or anything like that?
You know, every time I hang out with the Brammo guys, I tell them, you know, you can just give me a little of that TTX love, you know, slip some sort of, you know, black market firmware on there, you know, like, but, if I have a desire to, you know, hack, do all the hacks, it's, I wish that I could read the logs and then there've been some people on the forum that have done some, you know, unofficial third party log reading. I have this insane perverse desire to look at graphs of my motorcycle. I don't know why.
Yeah, no, that's okay. It's all right. Suspension. You bought the R.
Yep.
One of the reasons was because you get to fiddle with the suspension.
Yep.
Marzocchi in the front, Sachs in the back. How's that working out? Or socks.
Stock factory settings. I think there's been kind of universal feedback that it's like very, very stiff from the factory. I initially just sort of dialed everything out to the softest just because I was like, oh my God, that's super stiff. And then it was fine. At one of the track days, Dave Moss actually took it and sort of set it up for me. And so it's, now I love it. It's definitely a little on the stiff side for the street. You know,
mm-hmm.
Potholes are a little noticeable, but it's perfect now.
All right.
Yeah.
Nice. And okay, so you got all kinds. You got rebound, and what do you got for adjustments on that bad boy?
Oh, I all tons
stuff.
Of clicks and dials and whiz bangs. I don't know.
Okay, cool. Fair enough. I work on some. I'm a bicycle mechanic, so I get to play with suspension every day.
Gotcha.
Yeah. All right, and then I try. You know, then I'll talk to Shalina a little bit about suspension and stuff like that. Have fun with that. But all right, so you ride it around, and so let's see. We've gone from 110 to 220 on your Clipper Creek.
Yep.
And you got it hooked up so you can charge from the RV sockets at the track.
Yep.
Well, let's get into the track days. When was your first track day?
The refuel event at Laguna Seca.
Refuel event at Laguna Seca. And you didn't have your own Clipper Creek at the time. You were using Brammos.
Yep. I just sort of showed up with my motorcycle. I was like, hey, guys, got any electricity?
Yeah, but they were hoping to see Brahma owners there.
Yeah, yeah, and it was. I think it was me and Arthur. Yeah, no, and that was. I mean, I thought I wasn't going to be able to do it, but I, if you're familiar with Helmut, out here in California, Helmut is a great guy and had some used XAM like AMA leathers that were. They are the most wonderful, just a combination of unforgettable sparkly silver and salmon, and it's just, oh, they're eye-searing, but yeah, I love them.
Sparkling and salmon.
Yep. It's a liability. Like, it's the kind of thing where, like, I come around the corner and, like, the Red Baron could swoop out of the sort of blinding flash that is me, like, bearing down on you.
Nice. What was, so you hadn't ridden much?
On the track, not at all. Like, yeah, I.
But you've been riding for 2 years. Like, I started riding in 1990. I don't remember. Six? God, it's been a while. So yeah. I put like 50,000 miles in my VFR and ran across the country and up the West Coast and the East Coast and all this good stuff. So always wanted to do a track day, never quite had the extra cash. What did the refuel event cost you? Isn't it like the cheapest black track day like in Aseca?
It was hilarious. I mean, it was like under $50. I mean, it was just something.
Oh, geez.
It was the Brammo parts of track days.
Brammo parts of track days.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was just, and, you know, I love the idea, and I mean, you know, now I have this silly motorcycle, I clearly have to take it to this silly event.
Right.
And, the fact that they required leathers, but I acquired these cheap leathers, and so I was, like, able to go at kind of last minute, and I arrived stark terrified, but ended the day kind of having fun.
Nice. How did the day start off? Like, did you just ride over the track? You don't live that far away, or?
I'm,
no, San Francisco's a ways from Laguna. I'm sorry,
it's a few hours. So I packed it in a truck and sort of brought it down. I got through the day with under the tutelage of all the people present. I mean, all the Brammo folks were awesome, but also kind of the Zero folks were wandering around, and there were a couple dudes there with some awesome just home built concoctions that they were just excited to exist. And so yeah, everybody was just super excited to be there, and I mean there's nothing in the world like going around a track, getting off the track, and getting to talk to like Shalina and Eric Bostrom about like, hey, what do I do in this corner?
Yes. Nice. Yeah,
it's just ridiculous.
Normally, someone like of Eric Bostrom's level, definitely, and now of Shalina's level, because like they flew here clear to Spain just to do that camp.
Yeah.
That would cost you some money.
Exactly. No, I mean my friends have started referring it to as the Brammo lifestyle. You know, it's like when you own the Porsche, you show up in the Porsche cap and you get to go to all these Porsche events, and they do, you know, the luxurious Brammo lifestyles. You get to just show up to Laguna Seca unannounced and waltz in and have Eric Bostrom advise you on your corner, you know.
What was it like to do the track day for the first time?
Oh, it was terrifying. I mean, in the best way possible. There were three stages of, started out going, oh, holy crap, I'm on a motorcycle on the track. Second stage being like, all right, I'm on a motorcycle on the track. And, then proceeding to get overconfident and aggressive and almost eat it. And then the third stage was, oh, I'm on a motorcycle on the track. Okay. And sort of relax. And then, that third stage of relaxing was actually super fun.
Nice.
And what was interesting, and this actually bore out later when Shalina was helping me out at Thunderhill, that third stage of relaxing, when I was just like, all right, I'm just going to have fun, I'm going to take it easy, those were my fastest laps. I thought I was going slow, those were my fastest laps. Yeah. So it was unreal.
Yeah. Yeah, that's I hear about that. You feel like you're going slow and you're probably actually going fast.
Yeah.
Yep. And then I may have discovered that on the mountain bike today, but I'm not sure. I went to a new place and I ride a really old mountain bike, so all right. So you went out there and what's your fastest lap time at Laguna?
Oh, I don't I could probably find it, but yeah, I don't remember. You know.
All right.
Yeah.
And then was the transmission more useful on the track than it is in the street?
I don't know. I mean, yes and no. Like, it was awesome to be able to pick sort of my level of regen. In the same sort of token that when I'm coasting down a hill, if I want to coast slightly quicker, I'll shift up a gear and, you know, coast slightly quicker. You know, on the track, it was, you know, and especially, I mean, I'm sure I was terrible at Laguna. I wasn't, you know, but by, you know, now that I've done a few, it's, you know, it's super nice to be able to pick your gear, go into the corner, that's your gear. Like, it, you know, it allows you to sort of, I don't know, learn the corners in terms of, okay, I'm going to be in this gear, I'm going to be in this RPM, I'm going to try to hit this mark in the corner, and I don't know. I'm sure that if it was a single speed, it would be, you know, there'd be less stuff to keep track of, and, you know, it'd be easier that way. But I don't know. I could see pluses and minuses to both.
Okay. All right. Because we've read a few articles, a few reviews where, like, motorcycle.com is critical of the transmission. They don't understand why six gears. You know,
totally. I mean, the six gears are totally extraneous. Like, that you don't need 6 years.
Right.
You could probably get away with three. But, you know, it probably would have cost Brembo a fortune to develop a custom 3-speed transmission. So, you know, I understand.
And I've hashed this over with Brian. The other thing is the controller can't deal with the jumps.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah, that's the issue. Is it like it makes it life a lot easier on the controller.
Gotcha.
It can't handle the jumps, but, yeah.
On a day-to-day basis, I rarely go above fourth. You know?
Well, yeah, it's like somebody said, you know, I don't understand what they need the last three gears for. Well, I mean, you can say the same thing about a Hayabusa or a leader, anything, you know. It's like, right. It's like the quote I heard from Eric Buell. He got a phone call from, like, the second or third customer they had, and he's like, hey, Eric, I love my bike, you know, the EBR 1190 RS. And he's like, oh, yeah, great. He's like, yeah, what are the last three gears for? Yeah. You know? Right. Want to go faster, you idiot! You know?
Right. And on a bike like that, where you're, like, breaking every speed limit in the country in first gear, you know,
right.
What are any of the gears for?
Right, but, exactly. Yeah, just make a first gear and be done with it. Yeah. So, you know, it's, but I mean, the Cycle World test proved that is they're both 40 kilowatt motors. The Zero has more torque. The Zero weighs a lot less, and the Brembo has quicker 0-60 in quarter mile time and more top end. So the transmission is doing its part.
Yeah,
transmission is doing what it's supposed to.
And for me, I mean. You know, at the end of the day, I bought the Brembo because it is fun. Shifting is fun. I enjoy it. It's part and parcel with, you know, being all motorcycle-y. And, you know, like a lot of people have various reasons of, oh, you know, I bought this bike because it's green, or, oh, I bought this bike because of, you know, this thing or that thing. But, like, the reason I bought the bike, aside from the TIE Fighter noise, which, let's be honest, was the first reason, is that it's an awesome bike, and it's super fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, the transmission definitely plays a huge part in it being very, very fun.
Okay. All right. Cool. How much do you use it on the way to work? Do you even, I mean, because I know you can kind of just stick in third gear and just ride it if you want to.
Yeah. I mean, depends on traffic. If traffic's heavy, it's usually left and second. I get up to speed, usually third. It's, the thing about hills, that the importance of the sort of coasting down hills actually cannot be understated. Like, it's, or overstated. It's actually super useful because one of the things to get used to on the bike is the fact that there's sort of that balance point of throttle where, and now I'm making imaginary throttle motions with my hand. Trying to get to that delicate balance point of you're either accelerating or you're not, to be able to coast at a speed you want, it's very nice to have the gears of saying, oh, I'm coasting down this hill. I'd rather not feed it throttle, but I want to go faster. I'm going to go up a gear. It's, like, hugely useful.
Hmm. Okay. All right. I'd heard mention, I don't know if it was you that had mentioned it or not, but I've heard mention of the regen and the gearbox and being able to kind of tune your regen as you ride with the gearbox, you know.
Sorry, what?
I'd heard of people kind of suggesting that, you know, well, you can... One of the advantages of the transmission, I was saying gearbox, sorry, was
you can
kind of on the fly tune how much regen you want.
Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, instead of hitting a button or something. All right. Yeah. Have you ridden a Zero?
Yes. I rode, what's the supermoto looking one?
The S? Or the DS? The DS looks like a dual sport.
Maybe
the S is. Oh no, the FX.
FX, that's the one.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It was. I mean, for if you want that sort of bike, it was great.
Yeah. It's a very different bike from the Impulse.
Yeah, and I like spookily quiet. Like.
Yes. Like, yes.
I mean, just because the whole belt drive and lack of transmission and all that stuff, it was really really funny.
Cool. No TIE fighter noise.
Oh yeah, no, it just did not cause the same stirring in the nether regions.
let's see here. All right, so we did the first track day at Laguna Seca. You had a good time. What else have you done for track days?
So, I mean the real start of where everything went downhill was I was talking to Shalina about the refuel event, and I don't know, we were just sort of, you know, kind of talking how it went, and I was like, yeah, it was really, really fun, but the sessions were super short. You know, you had a lot of these sort of custom homebrewed things and a lot of previous gen bikes that didn't necessarily have the range, and so it was like 15-minute sessions. And so, I'd just be getting in the groove of getting comfortable with the track, getting, you know, kind of iteratively improving, and then to be over. And I sort of, you know, expressed my slight frustration with, you know, I wish the sessions were longer. And she's like, well, if you want more track time, you should come to an open track day. And I said, oh, what's an open track day? And it turns out that, the Brambo folks were doing some testing at Thunder Hill. And it was just a group was doing an open track day and they happened to have extra slots. And Brambo was like, all right, sweet. And so, true to form, I just showed up and was like, hey, guys, got any electricity?
Hey, Eric, can you tell me about how to get into turn three?
Right.
You sit on like, down, just kind of put your feet up in the chair, and you sit in the coffee. Like, yeah, can you make an adjustment, too, to the, you know.
Yeah. Brian was like, how did you find out about this?
Oh, shoot. Did you know about it, or did you just happen to show up and just...
Right. No, like Shalina told me about it. She's like, yeah. So it was like $200 for, I mean, basically 7 hours of contiguous track time.
Oof, wow.
And it was, I mean, it was awesome. It was awesome. I mean, you just rode until you couldn't, you know, I mean, the limitation was, you know, your kind of physical and or mental capacity. And it was brilliant because it sort of, it allowed me to explore the track at my own pace. I didn't have to, you know, plan around sessions or end when, you know, other people wanted me to end or whatever. And it was brilliant. And I got a lot more comfortable at the end of the day when they were done with the testing, like kind of the last half hour of the day. Shalina stuck like intercom on the helmet, and we she chased me around the track and me pointers like around the track. And I mean, there's, you know, like talking to people after, you know, about like, oh, you should go into this corner this way, like do this next time. That's one thing. And that's great. But getting feedback in real time, right?
Oh, like, wow.
In, you know, in the middle of the corner, Shalina's yelling at me to, like, get my ass off the seat. Like, you know. Yeah.
Yeah.
And sweet. So, yeah, it was, I mean, that did more to make me more comfortable with the track than, you know, anything I've done. And I'll say make me more comfortable with the bike. I think it made me a better rider in general, but it also made me a lot more comfortable with kind of the limits of traction, you know, the limits of the impulse in general. I think everyone should do it. I keep yelling at Brambo to do kind of an owner like instructional track day, because it was just awesome.
That's a very good idea. Shalina's talked about something. She wants to do some sort of event. She's like, you should come and cover it. And I'm like, oh,
yep.
Okay.
Yep, you should. And they should.
Yeah. Well, I can't just, you know, I have to have, like, full funding. So I can't even afford my website at this point. But, yeah, so, all right. And so you did a third one. Now, did you do this one with your roommate 675?
Yep. I brought that and the impulse, and it was awesome to see the contrast between the two, but because I mean the 675 was boatloads of fun as well.
Oh yeah, I had a roommate who had one, and he bought it and was learning to ride, so I used to teach him, and he let me ride it once in a while. It was a nice bike.
Yeah, great bikes, and you know this one is the perfect track bike because it was you know crashed, fixed. Stolen, crashed while stolen, fixed, crashed again. I mean, the entire thing is held together with zip ties. I mean, the perfect track bite. So,
yeah. Yeah, you speak the truth. All right, so, we're going to get into that in a bit. Third track day was where? Back at Thunder Hill again?
Yeah, all my track days since have been Thunder Hill.
And have you steadily improved in time? And what specifically about the taking the impulse R to the track should people know?
Do it. I mean,
well, I mean the batteries heat, and then it takes longer to charge. And
if it's a super hot day, Brammo actually, they developed this kind of. I don't know if you've written much about this, but they developed this incredible kind of homebrewed custom battery charging technology, like a thermal mitigation system that consists of a giant golf umbrella covering the bike.
I've seen that, yeah. I thought of it in those terms, but yeah, all right.
Yeah, and I actually found myself wishing I had one of those.
Yeah, I've seen the umbrellas being used in the bikes instead of the people.
Right, exactly. And so yeah, I mean, heat is a factor. If you're doing it right, you're gonna toast the batteries after, you know, a few laps, and then your regen turns off. And it's actually interesting to ride the bike without regen, just because it makes you way more cognizant of braking and stuff like that. But yeah, it's interesting because you should take an impulse to the track because unless you've ridden another electric motorcycle on the track, I mean, it is unlike any other bike I've ridden on the track. It's unlike any other experience just from the feedback you get. We've already talked about also the lack of reciprocating mass and gyroscopic force to fight that I'm sure other people have talked about. Just all these sort of factors that make it this totally unique experience that everyone should do. And it was very interesting for me to ride an electric bike on the track first and then ride gas bikes. Now I understand these ways in which it's better.
Ah, excellent. All right, so you go out and you've done three track days and you've taken your buddy's bike to two of them. So you've ridden biking and electric back to back, which is, you know, gas and electric back to back, which is really interesting. Or petrol for our British friends.
Yes.
And Australians. So you go out and you go riding with your buddies, and one of them has a. What do your buddies ride?
Let's see. So I think it's been 5 track days at this point because I've done a few since.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Oh yeah, dude. I'm telling you, it's a downward spiral. It's vicious.
Okay, so you went Laguna once, and now you're just hooked on Thunder Hill.
Yeah, I love Thunder Hill. It's great. Our circle of friends. What did we bring last time? A couple of 675s, Ducati 999, a Ducati 749, a Kawasaki ZX10, the hilarious East German MZ, just a ridiculous mishmash of bikes. Most of which I got to ride because we were all just sort of like, hey, you should ride this. Hey, you should ride this. So I got to ride most of those. I did not ride the ZX10 because I saw that it wheelied during every single corner. So I left that one for, you know, advanced next stages.
But, the next stages.
Yeah.
So you rode those at track days or just out and about?
Oh, at the track days, yeah.
At the track days. What about out and about? The same bikes?
I haven't ridden all of those on the street.
But your buddies ride with you. What do they show up on when you guys go for a ride?
Oh, today there was a handlebarred 675, so kind of a street triple. A CBR 600. Frequently, my other roommate has a 999, also handlebarred. Aprilia Futura, the Aprilia Futura.
Oh, there you go, Sport Tour, yep.
Yeah. Some supermotos in there. There's a KTM 690. There's a bunch of well-represented genres.
Right. So when you go out on a group ride, do you have any issues keeping up? Do people get mad when you're like, oh man, I got to plug in, so I got to go home? I mean,
keeping up in terms of pace?
Yes.
No, because, you know, rarely are we going over 100. And, you know, from at street legal speeds, the impulse is as fast as anything on the street. Off the line, you know, even the 999 can't even keep up. You know, then we get to, you know, 40 or 50 and it blows by. But, you know, off the line from zero, it will just out-accelerate anything. In terms of charging, this is another of the luxurious Brammo lifestyle. There's a – in Fremont, California, which is, call it, I don't know, 40 miles south of me, something like that.
Yeah.
There's a Target that has a huge field of charging. It has like 14 charge points.
Wow.
In a random Target in Fremont, and it's amazing. And so a frequent destination is there. We all show up at the Target. I plug in, get dirty looks from the yuppies plugging in their Prius plugins. We all stroll into the Target looking like, you know, terrible hooligan motorcyclists. Go buy groceries at the Target grocery. And then we, like, camp out in the Target sort of, like, place where you eat your crappy hot dogs, but we open all the groceries and, like, eat. We construct, like, salami sandwiches. Like, you know, it's – we take over the Target deli area, basically, and it's, like, just the Brammo lifestyle.
This is brilliant.
It's amazing.
That's awesome. And then so everyone's cool with that. It's become a thing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, certainly there's some – eye rolling at, oh god, Jeff's got a charge, but, you know, no more than the amount of eye rolling of like, ah ha ha, you have to, you know, fill up with dinosaur juice now. while I ride around in silent circles around them in the part in the gas station.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, it's brilliant.
that's like the smirk taken to a whole new level.
Oh yeah, I mean, or you know, when they have to, you know, sort of when we're at a stoplight, I just sort of like, it's standard practice now for me to like, you know, creep up next to them and sort of inch forward, being like, aha, only one hand. Yes.
Okay, so when you go on a group ride, the bike's not slowing you down at all?
No. I mean, unless we're going, call it, you know, if we're intending to go for a ride, let, you know, throw in a lunch stop with an, you know, call it an hour of charging, you know, call the practical range of a bike for a group ride, you know, the range of the bike plus an hour of charging. If we're intending on doing more than 100 miles, then yes, it'd be an issue. But rarely do sort of casual group rides on the weekend go above that. At least among, you know, kind of the folks I hang out with.
All right. Cool. I'd wondered about that, because I mean, I've put in some 300-mile weekends.
Yeah. And for things like that, I mean, I'm definitely not going to casually, you know, go up to, you know, Sonoma and go up on those roads, which a lot of people do. And, you know, that is a limitation. Like, I cannot do that on the Impulse.
Yeah.
But in terms of roads around here, it works totally fine.
All right, cool. So you've ridden a lot of gas bikes on the track, and you've ridden the Impulse on the track, and you've ridden them on the street. Where does the Impulse rate? What's better? What still needs to happen?
I mean, you know, granted, I'm biased because I'm most comfortable with the Impulse. I mean, that's probably the single bike I've ridden the most in my whole motorcycling career.
Right.
And so I'm comfortable with it. I like, in terms of street rideability, for me, the ergonomics and everything are perfect. You know, the main thing is just charge time in terms of being a total direct counterpart to a gas bike. Range doesn't even matter. You know, you look at something like the new Aprilia,
yes,
like that gets like 20 miles a gallon.
Yeah.
And you know, like, in fact, last time I was at Scuderia, they were, you know, one of the techs was working on one, and he was saying, like, we were laughing that my Impulse has a longer range than the new Aprilia. Like, right?
Yeah, no, you're
and,
right.
And so range in and of itself is not a showstopper. The issue is time to fill up that range again.
Right.
And, you know, if I were to do, like, a Terry Hirschner and, you know, have like five chargers strapped to the side of my bike, that'd be fine. But it's just, you know, there's gotta be some sort of mitigation of that charge time. And, but yeah, I mean, that's been the only area where the Impulse has been like, I would consider it at a disadvantage compared to the other bikes I've ridden. Well, that and obviously top speed. Like, I'm not going to go, you know, When you're on a freeway doing 80, you know, the 675 is gonna, you know, nearly wheelie if you drop the throttle and the Impulse,
yeah,
you know, goes another mile an hour faster.
Well, you can hit 105 on that, right?
Yeah, I like maybe 106, 107, but yeah, I mean down the front straight of Thunderhill, I definitely got almost to 110.
Nice.
But, you know, on the Daytona, it was like 130 or 140. So, you know, it's, if you consider like just absolute top speed to be a disadvantage, the Impulse is a disadvantage. However, I would argue on the street, when we're speaking of motorcyclists that are not wearing tank tops and Icon field vests, not going to be doing that most of the time.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Maintenance on the transmission? I mean, maintenance on the bike, period. You put a new set of sneakers on there, and you change the oil one quart, 1 liter every 3,000 miles.
Yeah.
No filter, right?
Yeah, it's. I mean, the maintenance is just it's comical. Like, I mean, it's been, you know, it sits next to the Ducati that just like leaks money on my floor. And, like, that mean I'm like, oh no, I gotta lube the chain. You know?
Yeah. Oh no. Oh dear lord.
Yeah.
The Scott Oiler would not work on that bike though.
On the Brammo?
Yeah,
it would. I mean,
no, because you have to have a vacuum line. You hook it up.
Oh,
with the...
right.
Yeah.
right. Hilarious. I didn't think of that. Yeah.
I mean, but, okay, you lube the chain, change the tires, the oil. Has it been a problem finding the oil? There was, I couldn't help but laugh because yet an oil thread had to start on the Brammo forums.
Of course. Are you saying that Brammo owners are, like, obsessive nerds? What?
Well, no, it's like, if you go on any other motorcycle forum, there's always, like, an oil thread.
Oh, yeah.
I know. And it gets heated.
Whatever oil thing was recommended, I just bought a case of it off the AMSOIL website and just was done with it. Yeah, it's that was not an issue. Maintenance is a non-issue. The only issue that maintenance is, it's gonna ruin me on gas bikes forever, and I'm gonna, like, invariably, like, just ruin the valves on whatever gas bike I have next.
Yeah, cause there's no maintenance.
Right.
Alright. Cool. We have talked for, 2 hours now.
Holy crap.
Yeah, so I apologize. And this is why people complain about listening, but when you record these things, there's so much information to be had that I just can't stop.
All right. Huge thanks to Jeff. I hope you folks really appreciated and had a good time listening to his track experience and this whole Brammo lifestyle thing. And in news, this is news, Jeff-related news. Brammo had a test last weekend. I think I might have mentioned this earlier. I can't remember because I had to re-record these things a few times to keep them shorter. Brammo had a test. Eric Bostrom showed up with new prototype, sexy carbon fiber with just white stickers, typical like MotoGP World Superbike off-season paint scheme fairings on the TTX, not the RR. So yeah, so there may be news to come. They were sexy too. I ain't gonna lie. it was that pure carbon with just some white stickers, and they had some cool shapes going on. It was pretty sweet. Jeff went to a track day, and he goes to the same track that Brammo goes to because of its location, and he really loves the track. And so him and his buddies go, and sure enough, Brammo's there doing a test day. So more Jeff and the Brammo lifestyle. moving on, there is some news, there's some stuff to talk about. I'll quickly talk about, I just had to re-record this. I'll try to quickly talk about Zero's 2014 lineup. I'm a big fan of their new 43 millimeter inverted forks. That's a huge step up, folks. I can't remember if last year's forks were inverted or not. I think they might have been. But they're only like 38 millimeter. And if you don't understand why I'm so excited, the bigger the diameter, the stiffer the fork, and the newer bikes, modern bikes run like big. My VFR had 40. Let me put it this way: my 86 500 Interceptor has 37 or 38 millimeter forks, and they're a little flexy. But the steel frame is pretty flexy, so if you put anything stiffer, it just turns the frame into a hinge. My 91 VFR, which is all aluminum and that whole boxy design, and really nice and stiff, not too stiff, but nice and firm, we'll call it, had 41 millimeter normal forks. The newer bikes since have come with inverted forks and are up to about 43 millimeters. And the bigger diameter is just stronger and stiffer, and leads to less flex, which leads to more accurate steering. And I think it might work with the suspension as well. Less flex in the fork means less binding as well, I believe. So, but it could cause other issues, maybe. I don't know. This is a huge improvement. And they also did some changes to the frame as well. But if you look at, go back and listen to my interview with Kenyon Kluge of Zero Motorcycles, and the guy runs Moto Zero and won the ESS this year, the unofficial ESS. You know, he said, well, you can bolt a Gixxer 750 front end to that. And that's, I think, Jeremiah Johnson, I know he had a spare Gixxer 750 front end kicking in his shed, and I'm pretty sure he bolted it on. All the racers were running 140 in the rear, and I remember it was 100 or 110 in the front, radial tires, radial race tires. Well, guess what? 2014 stock zero comes with a one, whatever the front wheel is, front tire is like a 100 width or something, and a 140 in the rear. Did the rim get wider? No, it didn't. Does that cause me concern and pause? Yes, it does. If you know, there is an issue about tire width to rim width, and if you try to put too wide a tire on a rim, it changes the shape of the tire and causes handling. It doesn't make the handling, you worsen the handling instead of improve the handling. Am I probably worrying too much about it? Yeah, probably. And I talked to Kenyon Kluge, and he said it's not an issue. You know, I got a message from him. 140 in the rear is not an issue. I talked to Jim Race, who's a longtime Ninja 250 racer, who deals in same wheel sizes, and he said, yeah, you have reason for concern. Do I believe the manufacturer, or do I believe Jim Race? I think Jim said you have reason for concern, but whatever, you know, so that's just me worrying too much, probably, hopefully. I still like to see, like, you know, a wider rear wheel so that you can put, you know, you don't have to have, just put a 150 in the back. That sounds about right. 150 in the back, 110 in the front or something. I don't know. I'm not an engineer. I just, so wider 140 tire, all the races running it. Now it's coming stock. 43 millimeter inverted forks. That had to be coming. Many of the racers, a few of the racers at least, were running those, I'm pretty sure, on their zeros. And the SR, this is what I like, is the DS, the S, and the SR all get the same chassis updates. Okay, the SR is the new one. It's the S, but with a racier edge, with more power. It's got the Psy 6 controller. According to Zero's press release, they have high temp magnets in there. They're supposed to be able to deal with the heat better. Got word that through the grapevine, so this is secondhand, so, you know, grain of salt folk time, that Zero said that they've got better airflow to the motor, which is improving cooling about 7-8%. Some folks are still not quite sure about this high temp magnet thing, so I don't know. Because the 2013s you can't run them full bore for very long. Something would overheat. An impulse, Shalina's ringing. Had controller and battery issues. Like you heard Jeff, his batteries overheat. Shalina had, I think it was controller issues, the controller getting too hot. Parker will tell you, you can run their motor flat out all day long and it will not overheat because it's liquid cooled. We'll see about that. Shalina had two races to run against the zeros. Both times Bramo was pretty sure that they were going to get the best of the zeros because the zeros overheat and they suffer from thermal cutback, especially running those Psy 6 controllers. Shalina crashed out and halfway through the first lap, or just after the corkscrew, or in the middle of the corkscrew. Yeah, somewhere in there. Exiting the corkscrew. She crashed exiting the corkscrew. And then in race two, they chased suspension setup. The settings. They needed softer springs, and they didn't have them. And it really caused some handling issues. Shalina was not happy with the bike. So, lessons learned. Bramo was scared. I got some talking to Brian a little bit. Thank you for the emails, Brian. This is a while ago. They they were concerned. They thought they had maybe completely missed the boat with the suspension setup, or as the evolution of getting that TTX dialed. And they went back and did some testing with Eric, and found another 3 seconds. So they and then Shalina did another race, and I think she did another race with the AFM, and everything was fine. So it was just Indy's a weird track. that's the name of that game. Yeah. So all the updates can be traced straight back to what the racers were racing this year on the Zero, on their Zeros, and actually way back to what was it, Big Blue or whatever that prototype was. That customization that Hollywood Electrics did of like one of the first Zero S's they got. The first thing they did was strap a Psi 6 controller to the thing and flip the handlebars upside down and give it a cool paint job. And I'm sure they did much other stuff to it as well. But yeah, that's that. My point is Zero is developing their bike through racing. Be nice if they threw a little more cash at Moto Zero, because Moto Zero kicked ass this year. And but anyway, it's their business, not mine. And I can be a fanboy and dream and hope, and but at the end of the day, they have a business to run. So, you know, yeah, c'est la vie. But anyway, yeah, that's the main updates to that thing. The dash is really cool. I probably mentioned that already. But the new dash is really cool. It looks much cleaner. I think they've upgraded their switch gear a bit. Not sure that the shocks changed, the rear shock. Hopefully the settings have changed a bit. Has anyone noticed that both the Zero and the Impulse were complaints were that it was too harsh? I wonder if they don't having a racer give them suspension settings for their street bike is not the right way to go. But I don't know. Let's see here. So the new 20SR, we're still waiting. I am pretty certain I was told that there would be 2014 updates for Brammo. And we still haven't seen them, and it's the end of freaking November. So, yet again, time issues, you know. And again, we know Brammo doesn't release stuff unless they know it's right. So, you know. I'm waiting on that. 500 Interceptor update. I am wearing, I've already talked about my boots. my carburetors are back and rebuilt. Thank you, Tom, so much. Haven't installed anything yet. I've just left them in the package so they're safe. I got my Penske rear shock, which I'm really excited about. I've already talked about that. I got saddlebags, two helmets. I've got my old Shoei, which I've worn too much and really needs to be thrown away. I've got a spare HJC helmet that has barely been used, and so I've got a safe helmet to use. I've got my Tourmaster double gauntlet race-style gloves. I've got it's a Tourmaster. Yes, it is. It is Tourmaster. Well, I've got some rain gloves here as well from Olympia. And I've got some generic with some slight knuckle protection gloves. I found my 500, my Honda service manual for my 500. Let's see, saddlebags, tank bag. I found all the parts to my intercom, my AutoCom intercom system, the Sport View heads-up display. I got most of the stuff for that except the wiring harness that actually goes into the bike. However, my tank bag, my AutoCom, and the Sport View box, the black box that sits in the bike, were all in a tote that end up filling up with water. If you want to hear a sad story about a lost, very beloved VFR, it is sitting, laying, side down, in my stepfather's backyard. Covered with some tarps, and the tote was, rather caringly covered with tarps, and the tote was full of water. Didn't have a cover on it, had tarps over it, and somehow still filled full of water. So this stuff sat in, like, I don't know, several inches of water. It was brutally cold because it was Maine and it was near freezing. Did not recover my Hindle exhaust system. I recovered one screwy little header shape and my tailpipe, my muffler, and the pipe that comes directly out of the muffler. So that sucked. no RVF or NC35 carbs, airbox, or radiators. Don't know what happened to all that, which sucked. But I have all of my riding gear. I even found my rain pants. I've always had my raincoat. I found it very handy. Already mentioned saddlebags. My tank bag was also in that tote full of water and looks really nasty. But I was talking to one of my buddies, and I suspect a pressure washer, and then take it to the laundromat after that and ask them some advice. And we'll see what happens with that. So yeah, it's, I got all my gear. I got my boots and I'm really excited about that. And those who follow me on Facebook already knew that, and, got some disturbing images, in their head, I'm sure, after my buddy got through with, through with everyone. So there's progress. It's kind of like Christmas all over again for me. Which is really cool. It's been a rough couple of years. I had everything. I'm not gonna lie. Everything I had left back home in Maine, I had just written off. I just realized that I could not hold on to that and think, yes, that's still mine. And I have to be grateful that my family kept it and didn't just chuck it and kept it safe. And now it's even safer. And still, most of it's still being kept to my family, but it's not too much of a burden, I think. I don't have too much stuff. So it's just nice that all this stuff that I invested in is still around for me to use. So, yeah. So that's up with the update with the 500. I really just have to put it together. My biggest concern is changing the fork seals. That's the hardest thing I have to do as far as, like, you know, and it's been right at freezing here in Tennessee, so hopefully a weekend or two from now I'll get over to my buddy's place and spend a weekend with him and his family, who are really kind. Thank you, Drew. And get that done, get that knocked out, so get that fired up and running. I found my front stand, my front motorcycle stand. The ones that attach into the lift, not into the bottom of the headset, not the ones that lift from the bottom of the fork. So it'll be easy to pull my forks off and my wheels off. So that'll be really nice. Don't have the rear stand. I do have a rear stand for a single-sided swing arm that I used on my, it's got a Honda pin. It's a Pitbull, sorry. A Pitbull single-sided swing arm stand. One of the original ones, it's got a Honda pin in it that was good for the VFRs. The early VFRs. So if you need one of those, let me know. Especially if you live in Tennessee, close to Clarksville, and want to come pick it up. I will be charging for it. But Richard at ESBK.co if you're interested in that. So that's cool news. We got this what is this thing called again? US eMoto Racing Series. It will be a class run with ARMA's Historic Cup Series. They'll be racing 10 rounds, and we're looking at Barber, Daytona, Gratton, Miller, New Jersey Motorsports Park, NOLA, which is New Orleans, Road America, Roebling Road, which is in Georgia, Sonoma, which is we've raced at before, the Electrics have, and Willow Springs, which we haven't raced at yet. Let's see here. It's a mess of, it's almost more East Coast races because Barber is in Alabama. Daytona's in Florida. Gratton's in Georgia. New Jersey is New Jersey. And NOLA is in New Orleans, which isn't East Coast at all. Sorry. Sorry. Just think of it as the Southeast. Yeah, and then West Coast is Sonoma, Willow Springs, and Miller, and middle of the country would be NOLA, down in the south. But then you've got Road America and Grattan are in Michigan. Or Road America, was it Wisconsin and Grattan's in Michigan? I can't remember where Road America is. I've always wanted to run at Road America, do a track day there. It's just like, it's 3.5 miles of wide open awesomeness. and the Electrics have raced there before at Road America. And it was actually a really good race. I mean, the fast bike went out and just left everyone, the Lightning. But the race between the Moto Electra and the Mavazin was rather interesting. So that was pretty cool. My opinion on this, I posted on Facebook. The basic is this. It is a racer series. This is a race. This is a series that's been organized. You've got 10 races all over the country. You can do a whole national series if you want to. You can do your local races if you want to. This is a race for people. This is a series. Honestly, this is a series for people who can afford to go out and buy a Brammo or a Zero, probably a TTX and an SR. Do the conversions you need to do for get the track legal and go race. There is no big there's no big weekends here. Excuse me. No offense to Arma. I'm pretty sure they know who they are, and they are a very big historic club race series. They're not an AMA weekend, and they're most certainly not a MotoGP weekend where, you know, thousands of people show up. So, it's not. So what I feel is this is not going to attract big sponsorship money, which is not going to attract teams like Lightning and Motus's. I have no idea about Mission. I have no idea if they're even going to try to race or bother with racing. I got no idea. Of course, I wish they would. If Brammo doesn't have anyone to race against, I don't think they're going to show up with the RRs. I think they're going to keep the RRs for R&D like they are, and they need those bikes pushed. They don't need them going around parade laps and Eric Bossom, Shane Turpin trying to push each other. They're going to put them up against gas bikes, and they're going to make them better that way. Brian Wissman responded. Someone had said that they were worried that if the gas electric bikes start kicking gas, they'll kick them out of the AFM. No, that's just silly, because if you've watched and paid attention from the get-go, Brammo worked with the AFM to figure out what classes to put the bikes in, and there are classes to bump them up into. Brian said, to be honest, the results wouldn't have been that different with Shane running Formula 40 and whatever else he was running against 600s. If they bumped him up to 750s, the results would have been the same. Maybe the fastest guy out front would have been faster, but the results would have been the same. The class that they'd get bumped into is the Pacific something class. And it's like pretty much run what you brung. A lot of fast AMA guys run 600s and just like wipe the floor with everyone. So there's room for those bikes to get bumped up. I mean, it's not like they're going to be banned and everyone's going to throw a hissy fit and throw it. Just like someone's going to say, I don't think they need to be racing with us anymore. They're too fast. And they'll just throw them into a harder class. Same thing with the TTX. The Shalina races. Shalina. Oh, it wasn't Shalina. She didn't race the TTX. Eric raced it. That's right, too. And got some really good results. And left Kenyon behind a little bit. So that'll be interesting. Yeah, I don't think Bramwell's going to be worried about the new SR. Clearly, bigger fork, better handling. Improved chassis, better handling. The wheels aren't any wider, so there's no more room for a fatter tire. The bikes are still light, and the bike will have a size 6 control like it did last year. Maybe, hopefully, it'll have better cooling management. Hopefully. That was their weak point, and I think Brammo's thinking their strong point is their liquid-cooled motor. But Shalina never had a chance, never had a decent setup like she did in the AFM series to really go after it. So we shall see. Whoops, I got distracted, didn't I? I don't see anything here that will draw big teams, the big bikes. And if Lightning Moses and Mission don't show up, Bramble's not bringing the RRs. Will they send the TTXs? Maybe. I think they would love the grids to be filled with Zeros, both Zero, Moto Zero, Brammo, and BRT, which is Brammo Racing Technologies, or Racing Technology, you know, something like that. Would love to see the bikes, the grids filled with Brammos and Zeros racing each other. And I think they would love to be able to afford to go to any race and support the, if there was four bikes there and there was two Brammos and two Zeros or three Zeros and a Brammo, whatever, love to be able to afford to go there and support those teams. But I mean, you know, if there's four bikes on a grid, don't think they're going to be able to justify that. However, if there is a grid full of these bikes, then maybe now you've got justification to show up to these races and support these teams. So, and just show up, period. However, you now have a 10-race series, 10 opportunities all over the country to expose people eyeball to eyeball with these motorcycles. That may be something they can't resist. I'm not sure. There you go. I say leave these guys alone for a year. The first year always sucks with anything, especially something like this. Just give them support, and we'll see what they get done. I mean, it's just going to be an exhibition race. There will be trophies. There will be awards at the end of the year. I just don't see the big. I mean, they're offering an E Grand Prix class and an E Supersport class, and I found out that yes, they'll be running both classes during the same race, just like the ERR does now, which no one really cares for. So there's even less reason to show up with an RR, but to send Eric Bostrom and Shane Turpin and maybe even Chileno Moreira, or at least two of the three riders, with a TTX. There you go. The ERR. Are they going to race the ERR? What are they going to do with the ERR? How many races are going to be in the U.S.? It's either going to be one, two, or three races in the U.S. with the ERR. The E-Road Racing, the FIM series. How thin can Bramo spread themselves? Will they send Shilina out for this whole race series? And send Shane or Eric, or I mean, there's all kinds of combinations they could do, I guess. So there's reasons to go out there. The problem with these races is, and I've been to an ARMA race where the TTX GP was, and it was 2011, so it was the TTX GP, and there's no crowd. It's all racers. There's hundreds of racers, but it's all racers. And there was a pretty good, interested crowd waiting to see what the electrics were doing. And we had the fast electrics, so we had, you know, a pretty good show. We had Motuses and Lightning and two Lightnings and Bramos and Moto Electra and someone else, too, I think. Yeah. The guy out of Washington. I can't remember his name right now, and I'm sorry. What will Bramo do? What will Zero do? I don't know. I mean, Moto Zero's budget's pretty, I think, got even tighter this year. And they pulled off some awesome podiums. Again, Kenyon Kluge proves that actually showing up to the races helps. So, and then this year he was doing really well. And had a bike he could do really well with. So, yeah, I think it's great. I think this is exactly the type of thing that Desire Sand and TTX GP were working on, to have a E Superstock rules package so that something like this could be organized. They could just take the rules package, adopt it, and run with it. As far as I know, the TTX GP has still not organized that, and so they've missed the boat for this year. This gentleman, I don't believe, has any wish to work with the TTXGP or any need to work with the TTXGP. So there's that. Arthur Cowitz is the guy that's organizing this, and he is the guy that raced the other TTX in the two rounds. I don't know where else he may have raced it. Apparently, you heard my conversation with Jeff. He owns both a TTX and a normal Impulse R, so that's really cool. He's a former superbike racer from the early days of AMA superbike racing. So, this is a series for you to go out. Anyone who has the money to go out and buy an SR or a TTX and go racing. So that's what that's really for. I mean, it'd be great if for some reason this somehow attracted the likes of Zero and Lightning and not Zero and Lightning, Motuses and Lightning and even Mission Motors. And then in that case, Bremo would show up with the RRs. And then you'd have a pretty cool race happening. But you'd have two races at the same time. But I asked about rules package, and he said they'd be adopting the same rules that the TTXG or the ERR was using, simply because they thought they were good rules. So there you go. Trying to keep this short, which I'm sure I'm failing at. That's just my gist. That's just my thing. It's a racer series. I have concerns about accessibility and ease of me being able to cover this series. There are three races within a day's ride. Louisiana Barber is only 3.5 hours from here. Rolling Road is in Savannah, Georgia, and is a hard 8-hour ride from here on a 500 Interceptor. That's pretty daunting. I'm not gonna lie, especially at 6'2" and heading for 40. I gotta change the ergos on that thing. And then. What was it? Roebling Road, Lola, and Barber. Yeah, those are the three. And New Jersey's just way too far away. That's really far away. It may not be further away than... No, 565 miles to Savannah. And I think it's going to be like 700 or 800 miles to New Jersey. So that ain't happening. Yeah, I guess I'll check it on the map, but long days of travel. I don't see it happening. But I worry about, is it going to be like the M1 GP where, it's a race series for local folks and they're not used to promoting it or putting out press releases and getting the story out and sending out lap times and all this so that people can write stories and tell people about it. I'm very concerned about that. So we'll see about that. That's my concern. That's where it's at. It's a racer series, not a manufacturer series, and not really a fan series. I don't think. I think it's a racer series. So we'll see. We'll see what they can do with it. Hopefully I'm wrong. So and then what else was there? I may have mentioned this before. I can't remember because I've recorded this a few times. Try to keep it short. Bramo did do a test day. Yes, I did mention that. Yeah, because Jeff showed up. Yeah, there's some sexy carbon fairings on Facebook. Yes, there are. And I have asked Brian for more pictures. So hopefully he will send me more pictures. But... that's it. The new 2014 Zeros, all updated chassis, which is awesome, and front forks, and a cool new dash. Hopefully it works as cool as well as it looks. It looks like some better switch gear too, maybe. So, it is Thanksgiving night. It's the day after. So I got to hurry up and get this done. So yeah, thanks a lot, folks. Thank you to the new subscribers. Hopefully more will subscribe or more people will pay. And I'll get closer and closer to being able to start paying for stuff. So that will be awesome. All right. Until next time, keep the rubber side down. Good night.